The Education Channel supports individual educational goals and encourages creativity for all. Visit UCTV.tv/education.
So I am an assistant professor here at UCSD, and I'm in two departments. I'm in the math department, and then I'm also in HDSI, which is the Data Science Institute here at UCSD. So I kind of work in this area that's called geometric data analysis. And basically, the way to describe it is through an analogy, I'd say, which is, we live in three dimensions, right? You can move left and right and forward and backwards and up and down, right? So imagine that you lived on, like, you're a little ant. You just lived on, like, a plane right here, just on my hand. Well, here, you actually only have two directions you can move, left, right, forward, back. There's no up or down. You don't know that it exists, right?
Okay.
So the way to describe that is that you live in this two-dimensional world that's actually in three dimensions. Or if you lived on a line, you'd lived on a little one-dimensional world that's in three dimensions. And what I study is actually this idea of what's called the intrinsic dimension of whatever surface or anything that the ant lives on, basically, in that analogy.
Okay, awesome. So you're a professor. What does that mean? What does the day-to-day of that look like for you?
The day-to-day to that looks like pretty much any other job. So I spend part of my time in meetings with, graduate students that I work with, colleagues that I work with, talking about math and talking about ideas and trying to work through the places that we're stuck. And I should say, despite sort of the, stereotype, mathematicians are actually quite social and love to talk to each other. A lot about math, but, about other things too. And so I spend a part of my day doing that. A part of my day I'll spend writing, either writing a paper that I'm hoping to publish, writing a grant that I'm hoping to submit to somewhere. So I'll spend some time writing. I teach classes. So I teach various topics to undergrad students, graduate students. So I'll spend time, prepping for the class, making sure that I have the right way to convey the information. And then I spend a part of my time sort of in unstructured thought. And sometimes to the outside observer, that might look like I'm being very lazy. but it actually is really beneficial because a lot of research is actually about creativity and about trying to just sort of think in a non-step-by-step-by-step-by-step way and actually trying to sort of get an image of the bigger picture of what's going on and sort of have free thought about the problem, because that's sometimes when you can have these eureka moments where you go, oh, if I just thought about it this way, everything works out better, right? So I actually try to plan into my day some of that unstructured thought, and some days I get it more than others, and some days that devolves into me, lying down on the ground and taking a nap or something. But I find that that's actually a really important part of research that I guess isn't as commonly discussed.
I think that's a great tool. And if anyone is ever being accused of being lazy, just remember, I'm just having unstructured thought time.
That is a great idea.
Unstructured thinking time. That's what's really going on. okay, so now let's understand, how did you get to be where you are now? Like, what were you like in middle school and high school? Did you think in middle school, I'm going to be a teacher or a professor one day?
No, not at all.
What did you think you were going to be?
I had no idea. So in middle school, I was just struggling to, make friends and understand what was going on in my classes. So I had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew that I liked math as a subject, but I didn't know mathematician was a job, and I didn't know professor was a job. Eventually I decided, I thought I wanted to be a medical doctor. And then I remembered later that I didn't really do well in biology. And then I thought I wanted to be a physicist. And then I thought I wanted to go into finance. And then I went back to thinking I wanted to be a medical researcher. You know, at some point kind of settled on, oh, you know, I could go, you know, I studied math in college and I said, oh, you know, maybe I could go to grad school and study more math because that seems fun. I didn't know what I wanted to do within math. I didn't know what the applications were. But I went to grad school and it's just sort of followed from there.
So what was your aha moment like that helped you understand, or what was your aha moment that inspired you to go down this path?
Yeah. So one that I kind of look back on when I was 10, I think, I went to the Adler Planetarium in Chicago. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and so Chicago was sort of the closest huge city that we would go to sometimes on vacation. And at the planetarium, they had this study of light and how when you shine light through a prism, it'll refract and you see the different colors of the rainbow, right? By the way, if you've never done that before, I highly recommend it. It's really cool to be able to create a rainbow out of shining light into a prism. But it fascinated me. And I stared at it for hours and hours to the point that I think we wound up, my parents didn't want to take me away. And so I think missed like a show or something that they were supposed to be going to because they just felt bad asking me to leave the planetarium where I was reading all this stuff about light. But that was kind of when I realized that there was cool science, right? And then I actually completely forgot about that. And then, what would it be? 15 years later, I actually wound up working on and studying the mathematics of how light can be decomposed into these various frequencies. The math of it is what's called Fourier analysis. Fourier is the name of a person from the 1800s. But yeah, it's called Fourier analysis. And I wound up being really interested in it. I didn't really know why until I mentioned this to my parents at one point. And they said, oh, that's like when you were interested in light when you were 10.
Cool.
So yeah, that I think was sort of the first aha moment. Not necessarily that I wanted to go into math, but that science was neat and surprising and that I didn't understand how something happened and I just kind of wanted to figure it out.
What is the most surprising part about being a professor that your middle school self would be like, really?
Yeah, I think the most surprising thing is how fun and social research can be and talking with colleagues can be. And that, you know, we all have this kind of common interest, maybe not in math or in physics or in, you know, a particular question, but in curiosity. Yeah, I think one of the things that's really cool and surprising is that you can always sort of be driven by being curious about a problem. If you're staring at something and going, huh, how does that work? Or why did that work? Or, oh, you tell me this, but why? That's like the driving force of research, of math research or of any type of research. And trying to understand okay, I think I get it, but I'm still stuck on this one thing. Can I ask you a question about why that would be the case? At some point, you'll wind up getting to a point where the answer is, huh, no one knows. And then you try to figure it out.
I think that's also another surprising thing. As I get older and I realize more and more that adults aren't as all-knowing as I thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I want to say thank you, actually. And I'll share with you where this thank you and gratitude's coming from. Because this curiosity that you have in math and in going back to the beginning of geometric data analysis, I just love saying this word for some reason now, how this can eventually support techniques to find out things about humans or anything faster. So let's even use the tissue example. Why does that matter? Because, for example, my mom has cancer right now. And anyone who unfortunately has gone through cancer or knows somebody that has gone through cancer, it's not fun, obviously.
Yeah.
And the faster we can find out about what's going on could actually save a life.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, that's a huge step here, but it is true, right? Like, we all need to, like, all these things contribute and align in a way that can help people in a real, tangible, direct way. But it does, it's not as obvious when you just say, my research is in geometric data analysis.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I feel like a lot of people don't maybe take the time, and maybe I shouldn't say it that way. I think it's worth thinking what those next steps and how they influence the next one that will eventually actually be tangible, real differences that help people, that augment your life experience, whether that's through, you know, a medical application or, you know, you could even do with some sort of app on your phone that can figure things out.
Yeah. You know, if I can give another example of something that I work on, and this will tie a little bit more into the personal side of things. So I was talking with some medical doctors a few years ago about this medical test called flow cytometry. And it has to do with taking somebody's blood and dropping it cell by cell through a little machine and collecting some information about each cell. And using that information, that is actually how doctors diagnose blood disorders. So an example of that is what's called AML, which is an incredibly deadly form of leukemia. And actually, my mom had AML and died of AML about 6 years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And so when I found out about this experiment, I said, oh, I'd love to understand it better. And I started asking questions about, what can you tell me about when this point cloud looks like this and all of these other things? And I started to realize that this is actually a pretty active area of medical research, is trying to do better analysis of flow cytometry results. And so I actually wrote a paper with a couple of my colleagues about a particular mathematical object we had been creating. I won't go into all the details at the moment, but basically we had just sort of created it off the top of our heads, thinking that it might be able to be applied at some point. And it wound up being really conducive to studying results from flow cytometry. So actually in this paper, we look at classifying different flow cytometry readouts of different people, some of whom have AML and some of whom don't. And we can basically do a pretty good job of separating out who had, you know, AML and who didn't.
Wow.
Now that's considered an easier problem in that space, but we're now trying to build that up and work with some people to try to see if these methods can help with earlier prediction of AML, for example.
Okay, so when you tell people that you're a mathematician, what assumptions are they making, do you think?
One assumption that comes up a lot in this is that I'm somehow have a innate better understanding of mathematics than most people, and that I was born thinking about math. And that could not be further from the truth. I became interested in math because I had teachers that taught me, you know, in kindergarten, my teacher was teaching us about multiplication with blocks. And then when I got into first grade, I already understood multiplication. So then the first grade teacher would give me additional math problems to work on because, you know, oh, well, he already gets the addition stuff and the multiplication, so let's try this other thing. And that's really how I just built up some understanding of math, was just having the right people helping me out along the way and pushing me to find the right programs to learn about more and to keep getting curious about math and delving in further. So I think that that's something that is important to understand, right? Math, I hate the idea, I hate the phrase of someone not being a math person.
Yeah.
Because I really see learning math and getting to understand math at a, you know, innate level is really just about practice and about, you know, having people that are there to support you in that practice.
That would be like saying, I remember, and I unfortunately did this, in ninth grade, this other kid in my class was really good at playing the guitar. And I couldn't play at all. It was just blah, blah, blah. Turns out they were playing since they were five. And so, of course, they're going to have, 9 years of practice that makes them seem like they're very good. But if I had tried and not just dismissed myself and said, oh, well, I'm not as good as this other ninth grader, so therefore I can't do it. And if I tried, I could also have played guitar. And who knows, I might have actually been really good at it. But when we compare ourselves to the person next to us, we oftentimes forget all the work that that other person put into to be good at it. So you're, you know, I also don't like the whole math people or, you know, whatever, because I do feel like it's just practice. And like exercising, you know, the people that like exercise will do it, or people who like sports will do it. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're not capable of doing it. What is an assumption that they make that would be right?
Yeah, so an assumption that would be correct is that I'm kind of nerdy and a little bit eccentric when it comes to how I think about problems. I do have a tendency to be very analytical and sort of step-by-step, you know, process-oriented, which I think some people kind of assume would be the case about a mathematician.
How would you explain your job to your aunt at Thanksgiving? Assuming your aunt is not a mathematician. My aunt just left. She just retired as a professor in electrical engineering. So not her.
Yeah. Funny enough, part of the reason that I got into math or applied math, which is sort of what I do, the most closely associated thing with what I do, was because I was having trouble in college describing to my parents what I was studying in my pure math classes. And I could describe to them what I was doing in my physics classes. And so applied math sort of existed somewhere in the middle, and I was able to maybe kind of give them a few words here or there about things that I work on.
How frustrating is that, by the way, when it's hard to explain what you do to somebody? Is it frustrating, or is it like an opportunity?
I consider it to be an opportunity. I find that if I can't explain to someone what I'm doing, even as they're, you know, asking questions and trying to build up, that it's an opportunity for me to sort of change my perspective of how I think about the problem to make it be a little bit more inclusive, right? To sort of make more sense without all of the, you know, years of classes behind it.
Because I think what I'm hearing when you said that was when you have to try to explain what you do, it reinforces concepts for yourself. It also might inspire you to think of something a little differently. And whenever you think about something a little differently, it helps you be a little bit more creative. And when you're more creative, you create new ideas and can invent something. So it's funny. I hope that encourages people to ask why until they really understand it, because it actually might inspire the person explaining to learn something as well. It's kind of counterintuitive, but.
By the way, yeah, I should say asking why and also saying, oh, wait, I don't understand that yet. Can you explain it differently? Can you explain it better? I think that's one of the most powerful things you can do in research, or even just when talking with somebody about their research. And I should say, I do that all the time. I'm always asking people to explain differently, or can you phrase this in a different way and all of this. And there's a power to this, which is to don't think of it as your own confusion. Think of it, put the onus on the other person. They're not explaining it correctly. They can explain it differently, right? So asking those types of asking questions to make sure that you can understand, you know, at least some parts of what's going on, can really be beneficial.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking with me and explaining what you do and how you got there. I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you for having me. It's fun to share, you know, love of my love of math and data science, and I hope that other people become interested.